will continue with the book of Esther. Let's turn to Esther chapter 1. Okay, I think we read up to verse 2, so let's continue to read verse 3. Esther chapter 1, verse 3. Jenny. Jenny. Yeah, Jenny, yeah. I think you're in the wrong chapter, right? Yeah. Chapter 1, verse 3. Verse 4, Shani. Okay, so this is the third year of King Ahasuerus' reign. And he had a feast to show the splendor of his kingdom. Okay, so this verses 1 through 4, you can say, is basically talking about the greatness of King Ahasuerus' kingdom. He had so much wealth and reign over so many people, and to display this splendor and his excellent majesty, he had a feast that lasted how many days? How many days? 180 days, which is basically half a year of feasting. I think there's a law, right? A law in New Jersey. When I grew up in New Jersey, and there's a law that all students must attend 180 days of school each calendar year. Okay, I don't know about New York, but in New Jersey, it's 180 days. And if you are less than 180 days, like for example, there's a snow day, then you have to make it up in order to get to 180. So imagine, especially for those who grew up in New Jersey, and I think New York probably is around the same too. I mean, I don't think it can be too far off. You have every day you go to, every day that you were in school last year was a feast day. That's how long this banquet was, right? Definitely... very extravagant, okay? I mean, typically, if you had a wedding back then, you would feast for about 7 days. Okay? It'd be a whole week of feasting for a wedding. But this was way more than that, like 20 times more than that, where basically the main purpose of this was just to show the whole empire that the king was rich, the king was wealthy. The king is so powerful, okay? And this is kind of to set up what's going to happen later, right? And the contrast is quite pronounced, okay? This is a king like who is so powerful, so wealthy, and yet later on we'll see what? He's a king over 127 provinces, and yet what? Foreshadowing. What happens later on in this chapter? His wife won't listen to him. Okay? His wife won't listen to him. Okay. So, just to give you we're jumping a little ahead, but this is a very wealthy king. And I think not only in the Bible, it talks about how Xerxes was very rich, but also in other historical records. There's a historian called Herodotus. Herodotus, he's usually known as the father of history. Is that right, Aaron? You study history. Herodotus, right? Okay, the father of history. Okay. And he was a historian who lived around that time, okay, 5th century BC. And he's best known for his work called Histories. And then it documents the history of the Persian Wars against the Greeks, because he was on the Greek side, right? And I think he also documented about King Xerxes and his wealth. And typically speaking, he was very wealthy. And then even today, in a lot of movies and documentaries that like to cover that time period, it usually also displays Xerxes in a very extravagant way. Okay, let's now come to your reading. Esther chapter 1, verse 5 through 8. Esther chapter 1, verses 5 through 8. Manmin. Six. Okay, you can keep reading. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Verse 5 through 8 continues to talk about the king's greatness. So, whereas the previous 180-day party or feast was for the officials and servants, like the basically it's like a governmental feast, this one, according to verse 5, was for what? For whom? For the city itself. Okay, all the citizens of this city. From great to small. So it's not just for government officials, but for just every single citizen or resident of Shushan. Okay, and it was also held in the court of the garden of the king's palace. Right? And then verse 6 through 8, just describing different ways to show how luxurious his kingdom was. Talking about the materials of the fine linen, of the curtains, the marble pillars, talking about the pavement that was mosaic. You guys know mosaic? Mosaic basically is like little small tiles, right? Sometimes they make like pictures or scenes. And these mosaic pieces were made of also precious, pretty precious stones, alabaster, turquoise, white and black marble. He also had goblets. Did I use the word goblets here? Oh, well, drinking cups, right? Goblets of gold. And then each was unique from another, which indicates that each one was custom made, right? Custom made. When things are custom made, is it cheaper or is it more expensive? It's more expensive, guys, because you have to spend time. Like I mean, back then they probably weren't really industrialized, right? I don't know if they were to replicate something. Maybe they had moldings. I'm not too sure, right? But anyway, here it emphasizes that it's different from each other, and there's just wine for everybody. Okay, wine for everybody, and if you wanted to drink, you could drink. So again, emphasizing how wealthy, how great King Ahasuerus was. All right. Verse 9. Let's read verse 9. Sabrina. All right. Okay. Queen Vashti, right? Now we're introduced to his wife, Queen Vashti. And she also made a feast, okay? Made a feast for the woman. So, for the woman in the royal palace, okay? So, back then, probably what happened was life in general in that time and even in certain cultures today, more traditional, okay? So, the men would socialize with men, the women would socialize with the woman, right? And there's really not too much mixing together, right? Okay, so the women of the palace court had a feast. Okay, let's read verse 10 through 12. 10 through 12. Edward. Stop right there. Let's take a moment to talk a little bit about this. Okay, I think there's two main teachings that we can learn from this part of the story. Okay, you can see that Queen Vashti refused to appear before the king at his request. The first thing I want to talk about is something that actually I think applies to our current culture, which is objectification. Okay, objectification. So this is implied here in the text, right? Where the king was with his with some of his people, and then he encouraged the eunuchs to bring Queen Vashti before the king to show her beauty, just to show her beauty before the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. Okay, so this is implied. Like, what was the purpose of King Ahasuerus to bring her out? Just to display her beauty. Which is basically treating her just as what? Someone or something to please others, right? Visually, just to please others visually. And this is, of course, something that when like human relationships become perversed and goes away from the design of God, it's something that easily can happen between males and females, right? So this you can see happened all here in the Old Testament, not only in this passage but in other passages in the Bible too. But it also happens today, okay? And even it's really quite pronounced today too, right? So, what do I mean by objectification? It's basically Especially here, right, is a treatment of women, but it can also be treatment of men too, right? Treatment of someone just as a passive object for someone else's sexual pleasure. Okay. So you can see that this is kind of related to what today you can often see in media. This is what is happening, right? You can see that related is what? Pornography. Okay, so often in advertising today or commercials, what do you typically see? Actually, right now I don't own a TV, but from what I remember, like let's say there's a commercial for alcohol, for beer, right? What do you usually see in an alcohol beer commercial? You guys for me, when like I was watching sports, the commercials, a lot of it will be for beer, right? And then what will be the commercials like? Anybody like to watch sports on TV? Timothy, you know what I'm talking about? Or no? Kind of. So what do you kind of imagine a beer commercial is like? Right. And then? A lot of masculinity, and then what? A pool game? Like billiards, you mean? Or in a pool? Oh, in a swimming pool. Right. Pulls all the girls. Okay. Okay, what were you saying over here? Somebody? Okay, let's... Uh-huh. Okay, so like sometimes you might imagine a commercial where they're enjoying some alcoholic beverage and then you have girls in bikinis jumping around playing volleyball. Okay. All right. Okay. Right? Or of course, like here, the advertising companies are trying to catch the attention and to create certain feeling that they associate with the brand. You understand? Okay. So for a guy's like fantasy typically is like to be able to attract a lot of women, right? A lot of attractive women. Right, so then they will use a lot of attractive women in it. And then usually these women are not just pretty faces, but they intentionally make it very, what, sexualized, right? Very sexual, so they're not wearing much clothes. And then the focus of that, of using the woman in the commercial is really mostly for this, right? It's just for the person's, like, ever hear the term like eye candy? It's just eye candy, right? It's just for people to look at the woman and just, well, I don't know, have good feelings, right? enjoy it, okay? So, but that's not all, right? I mean, billboards, sometimes when they depict women, sometimes you don't even see faces, right? So you just see certain parts of a woman's figure to attract people. Okay, so that's even more like this, objectifying. Okay, but same thing can happen to men. Okay, nowadays I think because of like feminism especially, right? You can see recently, well, at least I've read some things, where they're also trying to make things equal now, so they try to objectify men, right? So you see a lot of men now. Well, I don't know. I really have to admit, I'm not too sure, because I don't really flip through magazines, or I don't go to the mall. I don't have a TV, so I don't really know. But I think there's a lot of more advertisements also where men are like half naked, right? And like very muscular or whatnot. And then an ideal man's figure is portrayed, right? Okay, so it can happen to anyone, right? Both are perversities of God's creation. Okay, you can say. Let's turn to Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Shannon. Okay, verse 27, Shen. Okay, here the Bible tells us about that human beings are the creation of God, and human beings actually are the most special creation of God, in the sense that we have been created in the image of God. This image of God is not really talking about a physical thing, okay? Because God is spirit, and I don't know, God is spirit, right? So what does it mean by really image of God? Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 24. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 24. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 24. Jahao. Okay. You put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Okay, you put on the new man. So it's kind of like a, right? Especially in Chinese, it also uses the word image. Okay, Chinese version of this verse. But I think in English also it's implied. You put on the new man, and this is like, it has the image of God. What is this image of God? True righteousness and holiness. Okay, so why is it that every human being is valuable? Why is it that every human being is worthy of dignity? Okay, it's because all of us have been created by God. We've been created in God's image, right? And so whenever you turn God's creation, God's, especially human being, and you reduce him or her to just use that person for your own pleasure, right? You reduce that person to just like an object for your gratification, then that is basically perverting God's design and God's intrinsic worth and dignity that he's given to every single person. Do you understand what I'm saying? Right? So you can see that today, in today's culture, unfortunately, that's what we have resorted to now, right? In this often capitalistic society where basically the main goal is profits, businessmen figure out that sex sells. So we're going to use things that make people attracted to, right, that attract and get people's attention, especially from a sexual point of view, and put that into our advertising to promote our products. And then basically people are used for this purpose, right? Without them knowing, they're used in this whole big scheme, right? Whether they're, like, maybe the model who was in the commercial, they think that this is my job, right? But actually, they're basically being used for their image, but then reduced to just like a simple sexual object. Okay, so this is what's happening in society and becoming more and more pronounced too. I mean, if you go back 30, 40, 50 years ago, it wasn't so prevalent as it is today, right? And today also, especially maybe since 20 years ago with the popularity of the internet, and then with the popularity of the internet, the proliferation of what? Pornography, internet pornography. So people's thoughts now are becoming more and more perverted, right? Their mind is more on just thinking about different types of sexual immorality, okay? And so in order to catch people's attention, people have to keep on pushing the envelope more and more, right? And then people are more and more objectified. In fact, if you just think about pornography too, right? Whenever somebody consumes pornography, you are reducing someone created in the image of God for your own sexual pleasure. So this is something that we need to be very aware of and not to buy into that culture too, okay? And then especially for brothers, because we are more visual, we're designed by God to be more visual or aroused visually, we have to be very careful about our thoughts and how we view women, right? And about how we think about people who have been created, these women who have been created in the image of God, right? Same thing for women too, though, right? Women, of course, you've been created differently in this, in a way, you're more relational, right? So I think intrinsically, women in general, like, know and may not fall into this type of thinking, but you still have to be careful, right? I don't know. I'm not a woman, so I don't know exactly like how you might think, but just be careful, right? Be careful. But I am a man, so I know how guys think, and I also have had my struggles and temptations too, and we have to be very careful not to just follow what everyone is doing, right? When you grow older, you're going to hear, especially among men and brothers, right? Men will talk about women in sometimes very, degrading ways, right? And then not only that, they'll talk about, like, sex, they'll talk about even certain anatomy, right, in very crude ways. And basically, all that is reducing a person to what? What, an organ? Reducing a person to, I don't know, right? So you have to be very careful not to, we are Christians, right? We are people who have been redeemed by God. We know what is proper and right. Let us not fall into this type of temptation, okay? All right. So let's go back to Esther chapter 1. Esther chapter 1, okay,
right, verse 11 again, right? So here, King Ahasuerus wanted to bring Queen Vashti before himself, wearing her royal crown in order to show her beauty to people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold, right? And of course, when a woman is treated just like this, is she going to be happy? If this is how you were valued, will you be happy? Huh? If all your existence was just for the sexual pleasure of men, will you be happy? No, right? Because that's completely against your self-worth, that you know that you've been created by God and you're more than just a sexual object, a sexual being, right? So, but unfortunately today, that's how much society has degraded. Like today, there's so much emphasis on looks. You understand? That a woman's worth, especially for women, I don't know, maybe also for men, but more for women too, is largely determined by whether she is attractive or not, whether she's hot or not. You understand? And that's kind of sad, is it not? It's pretty sad, okay? So for guys, don't try not to think of women in that way, how society teaches you, right? That's not the proper way to treat and think about women. That's not the way you think about your own sisters and mother, right? And that's also not the way that you should treat other women too. Okay, they're all human beings with their own background, story, feelings, everything. Okay. So unfortunately, though, you can see that, especially like maybe on the internet and media, in culture now, sadly, a woman's worth by society, okay, not according to the Bible, is how attractive you are, right? And then, so when a woman maybe is past her youth, her prime, then what? She becomes, what, less valuable? But is that true? Is that necessarily true? Right, we have to think biblically, okay? Think biblically, and not be bought and captured by thinking that is in this world. Okay, that's how Gentiles think. Okay, any questions, comments? So I think especially for brothers, be very careful because that's the way society is going to teach you, right? That's what basically pornography is going to teach you, right? Okay, so we must refrain from those type of things because otherwise it's very sad, right? It's very sad because we are treating a person, creating the image of God in a way that's very undignified. Okay. All right, let's now, we read to verse 12. There's another application I want to talk about, right, which is now about marriage. Here you can see that Ahasuerus
and Vashti
did they have a good marriage? How many think they had a good marriage? Okay, hands down. Okay, there were no hands. All right. Basically, like, if a marriage is just based on physical things, right? If it's just based on, this one's based to me, I mean, we don't know the full story, but seem to me it's just based solely on physical aspects, right? Her beauty. Maybe she also had a good upbringing. Maybe she also came from a royal. Maybe she was a princess. I don't know, right? But if it's based solely on physical aspects, I think what happened here is not surprising, right? What happened here is not surprising because Queen Vashti felt used, felt demeaned. So, of course, she felt angry, upset, that she didn't want to be presented before the king's officials in this way, right? To just prance around and show her beauty, okay? So if it's just a marriage based solely on physical aspects or a relationship based solely on physical aspects, it's probably doomed to fail. It's doomed to fail. So you can see when you look at Adam and Eve, this is still during the perfect, before the fall of mankind, right? You can see first, there's a spiritual unity. Then there was an emotional unity. Then finally, there's a physical unity, right? So what do I mean by spiritual? Well, they were in the Garden of Eden. This was the perfect creation of God. The Garden of Eden is a prefiguration of the church, right? So, and then this is God bringing them together. It's God who brought them together. So, of course, from a spiritual point of view, they were in unison, okay? And then when Adam saw Eve for the first time, he saw, oh, bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, right? So he could see that, yes, of course, there was physical attraction, but more than that, it was something that affected him within. He knew that she was his perfect companion, someone who fit him, right? And then finally, what does it say? The two became one flesh, right? And then after this, they became even more emotionally unified. The Bible says they were naked without shame, right? So basically, they didn't hide anything from one another. So this is the way that we should follow as the people of God. Be spiritually unified, which means in the future, don't even entertain the idea of marrying outside of the faith, right? Marrying outside of the church, right? Be spiritually unified. And then as you get to know the person, you start to see how they fit you, right? Like their personality, who they are, their spiritual virtues, okay? And then you start to see, oh, this person is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, right? It's really like would be a good companion to help me. And then, of course, you get married. Then, you can be physically united, right? You can have sexual intimacy, which is God's design for marriage, that our sexual expression is only meant to be within the confines of marriage. Okay? And then, of course, once you are intimate physically, there's also, I feel, a different emotional aspect to it where now you just know each other, right? You know each other more and more.
you become more and more transparent to each other. You are naked without shame. Okay? This is like a perfect marriage that is depicted for us in Genesis chapter 2. On the other hand, Ahasuerus and Vashti, of course, we don't know exactly how they came together, but based on Ahasuerus' actions in the verses we read, it seemed like he was just attracted to her for her physical beauty, right? And because of this, you can see later on, their marriage, their relationship, basically broke apart. She disrespected him. He did not. He also disrespected her. He did not love her. She did not love him. And basically, this marriage, right, became broken. Right, broken. So this is some warning for us too, warning and some wisdom for us in the next, I don't know, 10 years or so when you are growing older. Of course, right now you're in high school, so it's still too young to be in a relationship, right? I don't think any of you are ready to be married yet. How many of you guys are ready to be married? Right. If you're not ready to be married, then that means don't get into a relationship yet. Okay, because you're basically just you're putting yourself in unnecessary temptation, right? Because once you get to know somebody more deeply, it's very natural to want to do physical things. Very natural, right? So in order to avoid sinning against God, committing sexual immorality, then the best is not to be in a relationship. No matter what your other brothers and sisters in Christ have done, like maybe you know older brothers and sisters or brothers and sisters right now who are dating other brothers and sisters. Okay? Right? Okay? Don't follow the example of brothers and sisters that you know that it's not a good example. Right? Don't just think, oh, because this person does it, then I'll do it too. Right, so wait until you are more mature spiritually, right? Emotionally, you're ready to get married, and then you can start to be in a relationship, right? And consider if a person is your helpmate, your spouse. Right? But when you're considering, don't just make it on physical aspects, right? Don't just for especially your brothers who are more visual, right? Don't just think of physical things, right? Of course, you should be attracted to your wife physically, but don't make that your like ultimate purpose, where it's like, yeah, don't make it your ultimate purpose, because that is doomed to fail. I'm telling you, it's doomed to fail. If you just value your future wife because of how she looks, guess what? Her looks are going to change, right? Her looks are going to change. So when her looks change, does that mean that your love for her will change? If so, your love is very shallow, right? Your love is very shallow. Okay, so in the future, when you're considering about your future spouse, especially your brothers, don't just base it on physical attributes. Okay? Think about their spirituality. Think about their maturity. Think about how they can help you, their personality, how they can help you in your future home, as also serving together, right? These type of considerations. Okay, any questions? Comments? Okay, I think there's still time. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. Monica. Okay. This is maybe a verse I'll expand on later to next class. I think it's what? Tonight? Okay. This is kind of like a very excellent biblical wisdom that you can keep in mind and then apply eventually, maybe 10 years later, when you're married. Okay? Men and women are different, okay, in general. Of course, physically, but also what they need from their spouse. Okay? For a man, most of the time, a man would rather be respected than loved. Right? Rather be respected than loved. Okay? So you can see here, Paul tells the wife, see that she respects her husband. Right? Which means like things like in public, you don't like shame your husband. Right? Like maybe your husband's talking and it's like, oh yeah, I drove the car to the supermarket, and then the wife goes, no, it wasn't yesterday. That was the day before yesterday, right? I don't know. Just to, like, correct her husband in front of everyone. Usually that would get a guy mad, okay? Right? Of course, for women, of course, they'll care about that too, but I think it's a little bit less than how it affects a man, right? And then also here, biblical wisdom. Let each one of you husbands in particular so love his own wife as himself. Wives and women in general, they need love. Okay, need to feel loved. Okay, so you can see that there's like this balance between love and respect that happens between the male and female, brothers and sisters, right? Husband and wife here. Maybe this is something we'll expand upon in the next class. So there's differences, okay? There's differences. God created us with these differences, and this is actually a great mystery. It actually reflects the church, Jesus Christ and the church, but it's also, from a practical standpoint, things that we ought to be doing in our future marriages. Okay. Let's now kneel down and pray, conclude our morning classes.